from NPR Music. You're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. Kate Tempest is a poet, a playwright, a hip-hop artist from London's Southeast Side, and today's guest DJ.
Who's bad? To the kiddie in a jacko hat, to the kiddie in a Rooney shirt dragging back the curtains in the room in her daddy's flat. A young girl heard the truth in an alley cat howling on the roof next door. Imagine that all your idols were just like you. Nothing's beyond you, do what you want to do if you feel that it wants you to. Look, true never meant nothing more than it means right now when everything's fake.
She's also one of the most dynamic, straight-to-the-heart performers I've ever seen. Certainly the best thing I saw at South by Southwest this year, 2015. And though she put out an album nearly a year ago, I only discovered her music this year. That 2014 album's called Everybody Down. Kate Tempest performed a Tiny Desk concert here at NPR a few weeks ago. I asked her then if she'd play DJ for us and perhaps talk about the music that changed her and made her do what she does now. Sometimes bringing audiences to tears and always filling hearts with compassion. She did that today for me with a spoken word piece at the Tiny Desk. I asked her what it was like to perform in such an intimate setting and with just her musical partner, Craig Bass.
It felt just like being in his bedroom when we were 14.
I was going to say, you guys seem like really old friends.
Yeah, we've been friends since we were kids.
And his name exactly, his name
is? Craig Bass is his music name.
Were there people that you saw at age 14 and 12 and so on, or 15, that you would see perform that you went, I want to be doing that?
Yeah, there were so many. When I was about 14, I had a job in a record store and in like a kind of hip-hop record shop. And it was when I was absolutely living and breathing for rappers and rap music. So I'd go and see, I saw Mos Def around that age. And I was too young to get into the concert, obviously, so I was outside with my friend. We were like rapping to the bouncer until he let us in, and we got in like kind of near the end of the show, and I just saw like the last half hour of I think it was the Black on Both Sides tour. No, it was the Black Star tour with Talib Kweli. It was just absolutely out of this world, like mind-blowing. I was just floored by it. The same, I saw Roots Maneuver around the same kind of time at the Forum in Kentish Town, and his kind of commitment to the moment really, really stuck with me. There was this thing called the Essential Festival, which happened on Hackney Marshes, which again, it was around 13, 14 when we went there. And we saw like Biz Markie, Gangstar were there, Jar Shaka, and loads of like dub sound systems were there. I saw J.Ru the Damager, you know, like all these kind of names that I didn't ever think would ever come to life for me, you know, because I couldn't work out how to see them in England. And then suddenly here they all were in this kind of dreamy weekend in the distant past. I can only kind of connect with the feeling of just astonishment, but I can't really remember what happened, you know. Like,
the path to, well, first to falling in love with that music, to winding up in a record store, to winding up at a concert. What was the first thing? I mean, you worked in a record store because you loved that music, so walk backwards for me. Where did you get turned on to this sort of music? What were you hearing when you were really little?
Well, when I was really little, the first artist that I absolutely loved was Michael Jackson. I absolutely lived and breathed for him. I used to like watch the Moonwalker videotape every day, every single day. I actually did believe that he could turn into a car if he wanted to. He was like, you know, I love him. And then the kind of journey into other musicians. You know, when you're a kid and you've just got your one, Michael Jackson was the guy, you know, for ages until I was about 11. And then, I mean, hip-hop was just everywhere. It was all around. It was it's a dominant cultural and musical force. Like, my next-door neighbour, and on my street where I lived, loads of the girls, they were a bit older than me, and they were, like, doing kind of dance routines to American rap artists, and, like, it was there. It was alive, you know, Salt and Pepper. And, I mean, I know that's not really hip-hop, but, like, I mean, well, it is, but I don't know, from being young, and it's kind of interesting, like, pop, hip-hop stuff, like crisscross, and then like, and then realizing what a rapper is and what lyrics are, and like Wu-Tang was the first that really, I think I must have been, I don't know, 13 or something. It was around that kind of time. Before that, I always listened to lyrics first. That was ever since forever. It's really interesting when I hang out with other musicians and they haven't even heard the lyric. They've just heard the bass line or like the drum. They can hear just every single snare, like nuance. And I don't hear that. I just hear the lyric, you know.
So what? Let's pick one. When you were young, that words and all that stuff sort of started to coalesce. It was not Michael Jackson.
No, so it's Bob Dylan. So my dad was a massive Bob Dylan fan, and he used to play it in the house all the time. And he would like, he'd play Bob Dylan and talk to me a little bit about the lyrics and explain to me what, why he thought this was a beautiful line, or why this particular thing made him think of his past. Or so Bob Dylan was always like a big presence, big lyrical presence in my, you know, heart and soul.
Let's play something from Dylan and come back, talk about him, about your dad a little bit. What do you want to play?
I want to play It's All Right Ma, I'm Only Bleeding.
Good choice.
Darkness at the break of noon, shadows, even the silver spoon, the handmade blade, the child's balloon, eclipses both the sun and moon. To understand, you know too soon, there is no sense in trying. Pointed threats, they bluff with scorn. Suicide remarks are torn from the fool's gold mouthpiece. The hollow horn plays wasted words, proves to warn that he not busy being born is busy dying. Temptation's page flies out the door. You follow, find yourself at war. Watch waterfalls of pity roar. You feel to moan, but unlike before, you discover that you just be one more person crying. So don't fear if you hear a foreign sound to your ear. It's all right, Ma, I'm only sighing.
We'll try and get all of the 7.5 minutes of that song online for you to listen to, because there's a whole lot of people who have never heard this song from Bringing It All Back Home. It's 1965. Nobody was writing words quite like that. He was sometime had an optimistic like feel to it, but not here, not in this song. There was nothing optimistic in this song, right?
Well, there is optimism because it's so beautiful. It's him, like, you know, the optimism comes through the poetry, I suppose, or through the lyrics. Like the fact that you can put words to these feelings, that you can make something that speaks so truly. That for me, that's kind of optimistic. Like,
I love the way you. I never would have thought of it that way.
Such an incredible lyric. Like this is for me, it's like the perfect lyric. Like he not busy being born is busy dying, you know. It's so rich, it's so rich. And although I began my relationship with Bob Dylan through like kind of listening to him with my dad or whatever, this was the first song where I heard this under my own steam and like in my own right, and understood this on my own terms. And so this is like my moment with Bob Dylan of like, okay you're mine now, you know. You're not just something that belongs to a previous generation. This is like, okay, I get this. You could.
And you're how old and what year? Rough.
I don't know. Like young teenager. So I kind of. I was at secondary school. I was like, I started playing guitar. This was like when I was like, okay, cool. Write this. This is cool. Must have been about 12 or 13. That kind of time.
So a year. I don't know how old you are. So.
Okay, so I was born in 85.
So it's 97.
So 97. Yeah. Around that time, my brother was listening to. Like Oasis, not Nirvana. Yeah.
And what do you think of that?
I loved it. I could always hear, like, my brother used to play Kurt Cobain, obviously, at Nirvana. He had tickets to the show just the year that Kurt died. It was like, and I remember like sneaking into his room and rewinding all the swear words on the Nirvana tape. You know, the things you're just like fascinated by. But I don't know, I didn't really connect with. Like rock music, or I didn't really connect with it in the same way. I don't know why.
Yeah, I wonder why. I think one reason is, and one reason I can hear it in your music and the music that you're probably going to play for us today is they're all centered right around the word.
Yeah,
And rock music didn't always do that. You were sort of fortunate if a handful of songs on an album really had the power in the word as well as it did in the distortion and the. I mean, it often would come out in the throat, But what they said wasn't as powerful as often how they said it, if you know what I mean.
Sure. But saying that, I've kind of found my way into it now.
Like who?
Like Queens of the Stone Age, you know, like, or...
Huh.
I think lyrically, like, what, Josh Homme. It's kind of powerful and, like, dark and sexy, and it's, like, also kind of ambiguous, and the lyric is working so well with the beat, you know, it's really interesting. And who else? I don't know, the Pixies. I came kind of late to the Pixies, and I was just, like, blown away by...
I just saw them the other night. They played in D.C. 4 or 5 nights ago.
Lucky man.
The idea of you're in, what, South London?
Mm-hmm.
With girlfriends and friends outside hearing music. Who played that? Who played American hip-hop music? Was it radio?
So I had a lot of friends at the time. I wasn't doing very well in school. I wasn't very happy, and I just didn't go in very much. I used to hang around, like, just with a bunch of friends that I had made who were kind of rappers, graffiti writers, and we used to sit around in the park and just get stoned all day. And that's basically what I just really enjoyed, the company of people who are maybe a little bit older, and I kind of fell into this community of people who were mostly male and really into hip-hop, and so my kind of access point was through these guys who were kind of like older brothers to me, who started playing me. I suppose that's where it came. I mean, I can't remember. It was just everywhere. It's hardly like a secret, you know. Okay. It's like the biggest kind of underground movement and the biggest kind of cultural movement of my generation and the generation before, even.
So play something from that.
So yeah. I want to play RZA. I want to play 12 Jewels, which is off the Gravediggers album, The Pick, The Sickle and The Shovel. And this album, when I found this record, like, this girl who was like the coolest girl that I ever met, she knew loads about kind of government conspiracies, and she was like this kind of super cool girl, and she told me about Gravediggers. She made me check them out, and then I fell in love with Too Poetic, the rapper from Gravediggers. I couldn't believe this album, and then, but this particular song, I mean, we'll play it now and I'll tell you the story afterwards.
Okay.
How about that?
Good.
As long as you got mentally dead people who are living in a mental death, meaning living in a mental grave, you need somebody to dig that grave up and bring them back to life. There's no chance for a physical death, but there's the chance for the mentally dead. So we're going to come and resurrect them.
1-2-1-2. One,
that's why they call me to resurrect. I'm about to resurrect the mental dead by digging up their graves. Back.
Niggas is caught up in the midst of six. You better grab a hold of your crucifix. And this is it, the black God exists. But can you understand this? Let me teach you a lesson. Yo, the pre-existence of the mathematical biochemical equations, the manifestation of rock, plant, air, fire, and water, which are in its basic formation. Solid, liquid, and gases that cause the land masses and the space catalysts and all matter that exists in this dense third dimension. There must be observed through physical comprehension. It takes a nerve to be struck. Wisdom is the wise word spoken to wake up the dumb who've been sleeping. The fourth dimension is time. It goes inside the mind when the chakras energize up through the back of your spine. So observe as my chi energy strikes your vital nerve. One swerve of the tongue, it pierces like a sword through the lung. Have you not heard that words chill as fast as bullets when you load negative thoughts to the chamber of your brain, and your mouth pulls the trigger that propels wickedness straight from hell, from the piss of your stomach where negativity dwell. I searched the east coast and west coast down, and most found the small towns that's like ghost towns. Everybody move, slow down. From uptown to Bucktown, give a fuck now, Shaolin got the crown. And cops are still serving from Jamaica Ave to Myrtle, and cats carry more shells than turtles. Broken down park, your pussies unfertile. By hosts I never retail, keep females in D-spells. If you eat well, you sleep well. Send enemies to hell. What makes hair, skin, epidermis, fingernail regenerate, while everything else disintegrate? A Teflon vest so bullets can't penetrate. On the corner of my block, there stood this old man, a black immigrant from the land of Sudan. I used to tell stories to the children in the building, but never had a dollar to keep his pocket filled in. He bombed me on Deuteronomy, the science of astronomy, but didn't know the basic principles about economy. I said a wise man don't play the role of a fool. The first thing a man must obtain is 12 jewels. Knowledge, wisdom, understanding to help you achieve freedom, justice, equality, food, clothing, and shelter. After this, love, peace, and happiness. He had the nappiest head. I told him total satisfaction is to achieve one goal in the scheme of things. He who roasts like a slave eats like a king.
I didn't have the heart to
interrupt
at all. And I think you were back when you first heard it, just looking at your eyes closed,
yeah,
bobbing.
There's just something about you know, the kind of parabolistic nature of RZA sometimes, when he just goes there and he is so kind of gracious. And the story that I'll tell you about that particular song is that when I was younger, I managed to get tickets to see RZA when he was touring as Bobby Digital. This was a few years ago, but not that long ago, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. And I was watching the concert, and Bobby Digital, you know, it's the kind of party thing, and I've never really been a kind of party hip hop lover. Like, I want it to be deep and I want it to mean something. And so I was watching the Bobby Digital show, and it was incredible. He's kind of pouring out like liquor for everyone in the front row, and it's all really good and fun. But gets to the end of the show, and he walks off stage, and I'm kind of screaming at him for 12 Jewels. I'm just screaming at him like, RZA, I'm at the front, you know, play 12 Jewels. He comes back out, he's like, what? Like, he sees me in the front, he's like, there's this like white girl, I don't know, asking me for 12 Jewels. He's really confused. And so then he came back out, and he did it a cappella, like the whole verse straight into my face. For he held my hand for a couple of bars, you know, and he just leant down off the edge of the stage, and he just 12 Jewels, which has been this, you know, I used to rap that verse to myself on the way, you know, home from school for, like, and he was just rapping it to me at this club, and my friend was at the back of the club and was like, I just knew, he didn't know I was there, he was like, I knew it was you, I knew you were at the front. I knew that. He didn't even know the verse, but when he started hearing it, the kind of this story about this old guy, and oh man, it was one of the most amazing, like, it still just fills me with tingles just to think about, you know, because, you know, Wu-Tang, they're like gods, obviously, they're like gods, I mean, they're just men, they're just humans, but that was one of the moments of like, okay, the power of lyrics, you know, the power of words, like,
and the power of live performance too. And yeah, that's what you do. When you were in the club where I saw you in Austin, you were in everybody's eyes. I mean, you were, it almost seemed, I was sure you were looking at me, but the person 12 feet away from me was probably sure you were speaking to them. The connection that you make there maybe comes from some of the experience of having had that happen to you, but, or wanting that to happen to you, to want to feel connected to the people making the music, not just the music itself, not just the vibrations, but know that there's a human there who wants to tell you this thing and unite everybody in a room. It's kind of a beautiful thing.
I think it's it comes from, maybe from just when I started rapping, it was in kind of cyphers or small groups of people. You're talking to people. It's always been live. It's always been about kind of connection and communication. And then doing the spoken word stuff, it's the same thing. You're directly communicating with whoever you're talking to. And then for me, what I've learned through all these years of performing and rocking around, it's the most important people in the room are the people in the audience. This is what it's all for. This is why anybody does anything. It's for this energy, this gathering of people in the room. You know, if you're telling a story, the most important part of any story is the people that are hearing it. That's why it will live, you know. So when I have huge respect for the people, for the gathering of people, and also in other cultures and in other times, the artist had a role in their community. It wasn't just about this kind of ego-driven pursuit of glory or this kind of art in a vacuum idea. It was to speak with and for the community, you know, and that's something that I feel very strongly when I'm in live performance. It's about my place within this thing. This isn't about me, this is about us in the room, and if I can have some access point into all these people's hearts and minds, then I need to kind of at least return that, you know, at least be there in the moment and let them know it's real, you know.
I'm going to play with song of yours.
Grew up in a city where it's hard to be heard and nothing really has much meaning. Pete had his heart broke once, he never fixed it. Sits there in his chest with his arms crossed through it. Becky had her heart broke twice, she won't risk it again. She don't wanna see her heart get ruined. And now she's on her way to wash up and take the orders for spaghetti at Giuseppe's, the cafe on the corner. She did the night shift too and Matthew's at the sauna. She's putting herself through uni, it's hard work. But will it be this way forever? These are lonely days. Fine.
ESP and international relations. Great, let's see if Primark has space for a placement. Becky clears up from the lunch rush, crushed by the blank eyes. Impolite customers frosting their damn fives into a palm. She thinks there ain't no harm in being civil though, is there? He folds up his job form, gets up from his chair. The next person sits down with a similar air of dejection. He walks out, heads in the direction of the cafe on the corner for a coffee and some headroom. And this guy comes in, the first customer to close the door behind him. For that alone she likes him. He sits at the table by.
If you want to hear the whole story, I'll put this song called Lonely Days, D-A-Z-E, on the site, along with all these other tunes that we're going to play. At what point did it hit you that you wanted to write words for songs and then sing those songs and make music? You talk about being 13, 14 in a bedroom with beats and singing. Like, what was it? Is there a song that changed you, that changed your life, that made you take action, that made you want to play music?
It's just always been something that I felt I understood, or that I felt understood me. You know, like, I felt so disconnected from so much of that was happening in
school and family?
Life and family and friends and stuff that was going on. I felt like on a different planet, really. Mm-hmm. And music was, and books, I used to read all the time. There was something about being directly communicated with in that very raw, very real place, which is what I understand to be what makes us human. Mm-hmm. And everything can feel so synthetic and so unimportant, you know, like doesn't feel like the stakes are not that high. Like, you listen to a song and it's like, this is everything, and that's what life should feel like. It should feel that powerful and that important, especially when you're a teenager. You want things to feel that important, that powerful. And I was listening to all kinds of different music. I got my ears around as much as I possibly could, especially stuff that I knew to be groundbreaking, you know. Like, there's this moment where you start to investigate all these names that you've heard of on your own terms, like Janis Joplin,
yeah.
Or, you know, or The Doors, or like all these people that you've heard of, or even like, I don't know, Talking Heads, like whatever, you know, people that, there are these names that exist, or the Wu-Tang, whatever, and then you start to realise what they mean to you and for you, and you start to position yourself in the kind of lineage of all this stuff. I never ever felt that they weren't talking to me.
Wow.
Like, you know, like, everything I read, it was written for me. Like, even the great, great, greats, even William Blake, you know, he was talking to me. Like, and I would listen to music, I'd listen to a singer, and Nina Simone was singing for me. She had a message for me. And I know that kind of sounds a bit egomaniacal, but it was like, to save me, or to help me, or to guide me. It was all. And so then I began this path of just being, like, acknowledging the influences that I'd received and being as true as I could to the inspiration that I'd had from these people. And there was nothing else. There was no other path. This was it. Like,
you had to put out after having taken in so much.
Just, this is it. This is what I was doing. I wanted to write music. And it took years of trying to be a musician before being able to kind of get a record deal or da-da-da, whatever. Like, it was the right thing that it took so long, because now I'm ready. My kind of artistic temperament is ready. I'm grown enough to be able to not jeopardize this, or, you know, I can understand. I've got enough humility, and I understand the way the world works, and I've been through enough in life that I understand my relationship with my art. And like, it's kind of beautiful the way it's worked out. But for a long time I was very impatient. I was like, oh, when's it gonna be? And now it's like, okay. And every time I listen to music, it's like there's another lesson in it, you know. I feel like that it's such a powerful message and medium for kind of teaching and relating information that you can trust.
The writing of music and the writing of words are sometimes done by two very different people. How do you work the melody, what the rhythm's going to be? How do they come about?
Well, Dan Carey, who's the producer, who is just amazing, such an amazing man, genius guy, and I'm very lucky to have found this producer in my life. I think every vocalist, every lyric writer, we dream of meeting this producer who can understand and who can create space for you and unlock doors for you and all this kind of stuff. But Dan Carey completely understood my voice, how to record it, my temperament, what my brain needed in order to be able to make the connections it needed to make. So with Bad Place, for example, well, I'll talk about Lonely Days maybe, because that was the first demo we made. Before we had the idea for who these characters were, before I knew that I wanted to tell a long story, we started writing this demo in his downtime because he's so busy. He had like a couple of hours on a Saturday afternoon or something. I ran down to the studio. We start making this thing, and there wasn't Pete and Becky, it was just him and her. And it was just writing. Got to the end of this thing, and we were both like, oh, what is this, you know? And there's something about what I do that pushes him to kind of find particular melodies, and then he does that, and I rap a bit differently, and he realizes that means I'm into it, or we have a very kind of kinetic relationship. We're as much a part of each other's discipline, you know. Mm-hmm. I write the music, he writes the
you
lyric,
need him
I write the
and
lyric.
He needs you.
Yeah. It's like we're all. It's a thing, you know. It's really, really cool.
When did that happen? When did that start?
Well, we've kind of been in each other's peripheries for years. I was in a band called Sound of Rum before. We put a record out on a indie label in the UK, and Dan came to one of our gigs. And was just there was not many people there, and there was just this guy stood in the middle of the room, like with his kind of crazy eyes that he has, just staring. I was like, "Who's that guy?" Like, we started this relationship, but he was because he's so busy. He was like, he was a big deal, and I was like working as a playwright, and it, you know, like it was hard to get into the studio with him. But it took a good few years. We've been around each other, but we've been working together properly for like 2 years now or 3 years, but it feels like forever, you know.
You must have worked on Bad Place.
Yeah, that's him. That's him playing the piano. And
let's hear a little of that.
Sure.
People haven't heard it.
This morning, sirens flash like Christmas lights. Behind every window, someone's alive. My eyes are too sore though, the days are too bright. The wall is too tall to sit on without swaying. The day is too new to be over for ages. All over this city, people are hungry for things that they don't know the names of. Bad place for a good time. Good place for a bad time. Bad place for a good time. Good place for a bad time. I can't take the stench anymore. Nothing is real. Nothing is trying to even pretend that it is. The adverts are too loud. The whole place is shrouded in mist. A mist we can't see, but it sticks in our throats when we're out for a couple. We don't want no trouble, but trouble wants us, and we fall in the rubble, and we give it our blood and go home for a cuddle. And this is enough for you, this is enough, but this is not enough, not at all. And this is enough, this is enough, this is not enough, not at all. But here is a tree growing steadily, steadily, not being nothing but all that it is. Not even grumbling, holding its own in the concrete, the rumbling of cars, and the dog doesn't want anything. It is what it is, and I feel it. I'm dwarfed by its wisdom, I'm lit by its colors. I feel every fiber, and this is survival. Be what you are in the mess and the violence. Don't collect rivals, seek out a silence. Find something sacred in all of this silence. Bad place for a good time. Good place for a bad time.
Has your family ever come to see you? Did they come out to see you?
Yeah, they come a lot. They used to come when I was just starting out. I remember like we had this show, and I had this band. I had like all of my mates that played instruments. I got them all to be in my band so we could go to festivals together. It was ridiculous. And we played this one gig, and my granddad came out in his wheelchair. It was when he was kind of getting, and my mum and dad and my brother and my sisters, you know. It's like there wasn't really many other people there, actually. It's just our family. But like, yeah, they come out. I mean,
but they could clearly see this path coming out. I guess you have such a command of, how do I put this, I see a lot of performers and they're all about themselves, and you're sort of the flip of that. You are all about this thing. You do a piece, at least, I'm only seeing you once, I'm going to see you again tonight, but where you want to bring people together, and that is a personality type. I mean, you know, do you know what I'm trying to get at?
Well, it took a long time to
get there.
Yeah, because what happens is that you start making music when you're young, and you I didn't know the kind of person that I was yet, let alone the kind of artist that I was. So for many years, I was battle rapping, I was arrogant, you know, I was like, all that stuff. I had this dream that I didn't have a purchase on. Then as I grew older and as I grew into myself, I understood who I was as a woman. And it's important to say as a woman, because like, in hip hop, the kind of the trope for a woman, the path for a woman in hip hop was not necessarily where I was at and who I am. So the one amazing thing about hip hop, which the thing it's taught me is, you know, be real, be who you are, know what you're saying, know what you're on, know where you're from. So as I've got to know myself, like the way that I can respond most truthfully to all the lessons that I've got from hip hop and hip hop culture is by being me, is by absolutely knowing who I am and using my skills and using my talents to just emphasize and embody who I am and where I'm at. So like, you know, I'm 29 now. I've been through a whole lot in life. I've lost people, I've found people, I've loved. You know, it's all the stuff that's happened. When I stand in a room full of human beings, I feel them. I want them to know that I feel them. It's important for me. Like 5, 6, 7 years ago, that wasn't necessarily where I was at. I just wanted to do my thing. It's important kind of how long it's taken to get to this point, because now I feel ready to be me, to be Kate. And like, I think it's maybe just worth saying, it's kind of awkward that you're expected as a musician, as a woman musician or anyone, to kind of have your moment at 18. To go out there and like kind of have your thing, and you're this kind of cool, sexy, young pop star. It's in other careers, if you're a carpenter, you know, you're not expected to know your trade, your master trade, until you're like, you know, well into your, you know, your career, your age. It's a strange thing that we have these kind of dispensable artists. You want that kind of young, youthful rock and roll energy, but like, you don't have the wisdom yet to carry your talent. So I don't know, it's been a journey, that's what I'm saying.
Is there someone that you like to go see, someone that you know that has that kind of inspiration to you, contemporary artist these days?
Yeah, I mean, anybody, like anybody that's doing their thing, that's being real. Like, I love to see somebody being real on stage. Like, that doesn't necessarily mean they have to be connecting with me and telling me that they're there, but I mean just answering to their own thing. So Mika, for example, is a perfect example of this. Mika Levy, Mikachu, who like I feel very lucky to call friend as well as kind of influence and inspiration. See her on stage, it's just brilliant, because she's like, she has no front, there's nothing between her and what she's doing and you. This is like, she's a direct conduit for this thing that she's able to do. She builds instruments out of like boxes, you know, like, and she can play beautiful. She plays the viola, she just scored this the film, this sound, she made the soundtrack to this film called Under the Skin, directed by a guy called Jonathan Glazer, and it's the soundtrack is astonishing. And this is from a woman who can make the kind of darkest, hardest kind of two-step garage beat 1 minute, and then play this kind of hardcore punky like
broken
digital
ukulele,
right.
Yes, right.
And then she's made this incredible score, and it's like she doesn't divide these things. There is no high and low culture. This is just her, you know. This is her output. I find it very inspiring to watch her. She's very cool, you know. So her and like PJ Harvey, I love to see PJ Harvey doing her thing. It's a similar kind of feeling of like, okay, she's like a beacon, you know, she's just this shining beacon that just says, okay, you can be a woman in the music industry without sacrificing anything, without making yourself a kind of laughing stock. You know, you can be kind of cerebral and intelligent and talented.
If it hasn't already happened, people are going to come up to you and say the same. How will you feel about that? Because that's hard to take. Or
well, I think that, like, because When people have come over and said that they have been inspired by a performance or something like that, sometimes you get people saying, telling you, really opening up, because when a performance is that that open anyway. People feel like, okay, I'm...
I know you. I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
Yes,
so people have said some really intense things about their journey through life with my music involved in it or my poetry or whatever. I'm always extremely humbled. And the thing is, it's once you make them work and it's out there, it has a life force all of its own. I don't connect those stories about what my work has done for them with me, Kate the person. Like, so I think that's quite healthy. People can love it, they can hate it, they can think it's ridiculous, they can like think it's, or they can live and breathe for it, but it's kind of nothing to do with me, the Kate the person. I'm just, you know, as long as I keep those ideas separate, then I won't get a big head or do that horrible thing that happens when people start to believe that they're more important than everyone else in the band or everyone else in the room or whatever, which is kind of goes back to what I was saying about the artists having a place within the community. It's right that your work should be reaching people. It should be. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what are you saying? But it's got nothing to do with, you know, I am da da da. You know.
That's right. That's great. I know your head will never swell.
I hope so.
Thanks for making beautiful music.
Thanks for having me on.
Amazing, inspiring stuff.
Cool.
Kate Tempest, thanks.
Bye.
Kate Tempest, guest DJ, extraordinary performer, songwriter. For NPR Music, I'm Bob Boylan. It's All Songs Considered. Them things you don't show, I can see. Them things you don't say, speak to me. Them things you hide, ain't hiding. No fun ground, but we ain't sliding. Them things will hold you, let them be. That thing you weep for, leave. All life is forward, you will see. It's yours when you're ready to receive it.